Today is Friday, July the 3rd, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. The Colorado Primary and the Growing Support for Socialism by Patrick Martin. The defeat of 15-term incumbent Deanna DeGette in Tuesday's Democratic Congressional Primary in Denver, Colorado, by Milat Kiros, a 29-year-old first-time candidate and member of the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, is another expression of the broad political radicalization developing in the United States. In the statewide Senate primary, former DSA member Julie Gonzalez, who was outspent 9-1, won 46.6% of the vote and nearly defeated two-term Senator John Hickenlooper. Gonzalez carried the city of Denver. Senator Michael Bennett, a pillar of the Washington establishment for two decades, was defeated in his bid for the party's nomination for governor. The Colorado results follow the primary victories 1 week earlier of three congressional candidates in New York City, backed by Mayor Zoran Mamdani, two of them members of the DSA, the victory of a DSA member in the Democratic primary for mayor of Washington, D.C., tantamount to election in the U.S. capital city, and electoral successes for candidates claiming to be Democratic Socialists in Seattle, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, and other cities. This demonstration of mass support for socialism in a country where socialism has been demonized by the media, the academic apologists for capitalism, the two major political parties, and the government at all levels has immense significance. What is taking place is a new stage in the political radicalization of ever broader layers of the population. The official narrative of American politics for the past century has rested on the claim that the United States is the one country where support for socialism was permanently foreclosed. That narrative is collapsing. The conditions producing this shift are not difficult to identify. American society is ruled by a financial oligarchy that operates increasingly in the manner of a criminal syndicate. Workers who cannot pay their rent or repair their cars watch a president who is enriching himself, his family, and his coterie to the tune of billions of dollars, while his administration rounds up immigrants, deploys troops in American cities, wages war against Iran and Venezuela, and arms and finances genocide in Gaza. The millions who joined the No Kings protests, like the millions now voting for candidates who call themselves socialists, are responding both to impossible living conditions and to the assault on democratic rights and escalating war. This radicalization is the initial product of anger over conditions produced by decaying capitalism, which is increasingly, and correctly, viewed as the source of the social crisis. One recent survey found that 62% of young people view socialism favorably. Another found that young people favor socialism over capitalism by a margin of 2-1. Confidence that the market will sort things out has evaporated. People have concluded, on the basis of their own experience, that the system is rigged against them. Within the ruling class, these developments are producing anxiety. Trump and the Republicans have responded to the primary results in New York and Colorado with hysterical denunciations of communism, a recognition, in their own way, that the shift to the left in popular consciousness poses a threat to the wealth and power of the billionaire oligarchs. It's the biggest threat to our country, including World War I, World War II, Pearl Harbor, September 11, Trump posted on social media. It's a bigger threat, potentially a bigger threat than that, because it's like a cancer that spreads, and you better stop it fast. A group of centrist Democrats has issued a manifesto reaffirming that they are capitalists, committed to fiscal responsibility and law and order. This document refers approvingly to the McCarthyite purge of the unions and the Democratic Party, initiated in 1947 by Walter Reuter and Hubert Humphrey as the model for a new anti-communist witch hunt. Representative Josh Gottheimer, a New Jersey Democrat and fervent Zionist, described as aberrations the victories of candidates opposing the Israeli genocide in Gaza. "We've got to fight like hell to keep our party from being hijacked by socialists," he said. "Most of them are bomb throwers, not problem solvers." It is in this context that one should read the Substack column published Thursday by economist and pro-Democratic Party pundit Paul Krugman, under the headline, "There are very few socialists in America." Krugman undertakes to explain that the whole thing is a misunderstanding. "Very few Americans, even among politicians who call themselves democratic socialists, are really socialists," he writes. "What people actually support is social democracy, an ideology that is okay with living in a mostly market-driven economic system in which some people make much more money than others. There is," he concedes, "a real groundswell of dismay over an economy that increasingly favours a tiny group of billionaires, but those who say they favour socialism are not demanding a dictatorship of the proletariat. As for the left-wing radicals in America, they have no realistic prospect of getting their way." This is whistling past the graveyard. Krugman is attempting to convince himself and the privileged social layers for which he speaks that the millions voting for candidates who call themselves socialists do not really mean it. The DSA is the initial beneficiary of the political radicalization in America, but for all its rhetoric, it is a bourgeois party and has no viable program to address the conditions of poverty, war, and attacks on democratic rights that are producing its own electoral successes. It is a faction of the Democratic Party, linked by a thousand threads to American imperialism, so much so that its founder, Michael Harrington, earned the apt moniker of State Department Socialist. Its candidates declare that this should be a country in which the interests of working people come first. But how is this to be achieved? Through what mechanism? The monopolization of wealth and power by the oligarchy and the impoverishment of the working class are not the products of mistaken policies. They are two sides of a single process rooted in the private ownership of the means of production and the subordination of every social need to profit. To promise that the interests of working people will come first, while leaving the banks, the corporations, and the capitalist state untouched, is to promise a reconciliation of the wolf and the lamb. The record of Mamdani, 6 months into his mayoralty, is a living demonstration of this truth. The pragmatic socialist has worked to shut down strikes by New York City nurses and Long Island Railroad workers. He has reversed his campaign pledge on rental vouchers in the name of fiscal restraint, left the multi-billion dollar police budget intact, and has travelled to the White House to do business with Trump. The radicalisation revealed in the primary elections anticipates a movement of the working class itself, and it is on this that everything depends. History has demonstrated where the betrayal of mass expectations leads. In his election campaigns, Sanders promised a political revolution, only to throw his support behind the Democratic Party establishment, which helped create the political conditions for the rise of Trump. When the DSA candidates betray the expectations now invested in them, and they will, the beneficiary must not be the fascist right, but a genuine socialist movement of the working class. That requires the fight for a program that actually addresses the source of the crisis, the protracted decay of American and world capitalism, and the unfolding of a global imperialist war as each capitalist power seeks to bomb and kill its way out of the crisis. The working class must establish its political independence by breaking with the Democratic Party and the entire framework of capitalist politics. It must fight for the expropriation of the financial oligarchy and the transformation of the giant banks and corporations into public utilities under democratic control. The abolition of the oligarchy's political instruments of dictatorship and war, and the unification of the struggles of American workers with those of workers internationally. Not one of these measures can be implemented through the existing state, which is the instrument of the oligarchy. What is posed is the question of power. Which class is to rule? The demands of the working class can be realised only through a mass independent movement culminating in the conquest of political power by the working class and the establishment of a workers' state, which will reorganise economic life on the basis of social need, not private profit. The decisive question is the building of a revolutionary leadership in the working class, which fights in every struggle to develop this programme and perspective. We urge workers and young people who are looking for a way to fight, who understand that socialism is not a slogan, but a necessity, to join and build the Socialist Equality Party. Heatwave exposes workers to injury and death in auto plants, warehouses, and delivery routes. A dangerous heatwave across the Midwest and eastern United States is exposing workers to serious injury and death in manufacturing plants, warehouses, postal facilities, and delivery routes, where millions are being kept on the job without air conditioning or adequate safety measures. Europe has just passed through a parallel heat disaster, with record-breaking heat across Western, Central, and Southern Europe, with more than 150 million people affected and more than 2,000 excess deaths in Spain and France alone. In the US, the National Weather Service's Weather Prediction Center, the WPC, warned Thursday of a prolonged and dangerous heatwave across the central and eastern United States, with widespread highs of 95 to 105 degrees Fahrenheit, 35 to 41 degrees Celsius, and heat indices reaching 100 to 115 degrees Fahrenheit, 38 to 46 degrees Celsius. The WPC warned that warm overnight lows in the mid-70s to low 80s Fahrenheit, 24 to 28 degrees Celsius, will provide little recovery, producing widespread major to extreme heat risk and increased danger of heat-related illness, especially for those without adequate cooling. Local governments are treating the heatwave as a public health emergency. New York City activated an emergency heat plan, opening hundreds of cooling centres, deploying cool vans, and expanded pop-up cooling stations for outdoor workers, and directing thousands of Link NYC kiosks to display routes to nearby cooling centres. Philadelphia extended its heat health emergency through to Sunday, July 5th, keeping more than 50 cooling centres open, suspending water shutoffs, declaring a code red for people living outdoors, and adding misting tents, hydration stations, and medical tents for July 4th and World Cup events. The power grid is also under acute strain. PJM Interconnection, the largest US grid operator, implemented emergency measures Thursday. Reuters reported that PJM ordered all generators to run at full capacity, brought idle plants back online, and prepared demand response measures as operating reserves fell sharply. Heat-related emergency department visits are rising sharply. In the Department of Health and Human Services Region 5, covering Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, the CDC heat and health trafficker figure rose from 183 on Sunday to 1,536 on Wednesday. Region 3, covering the Mid-Atlantic, rose from 72 to 1,162, while Region 2, including New York and New Jersey, rose from 91 to 942. New York City heat-related emergency department visits rose from 2 on June 27th to 43 on July 1st, the highest figure of the year so far, on a day when the high temperature reached 103 degrees Fahrenheit, 39 degrees Celsius. These emergency measures contrast with the reality facing workers. In factories, warehouses, and delivery operations, employers are keeping production and delivery moving under conditions that workers themselves describe as dangerous. At Ford Dearborn Truck Plant, workers reported Wednesday that managers and maintenance supervisors were issuing orders to remove or cover electrical receptacles used by workers to power fans at their workstations. All plugged-in fans must be removed by July 13th, according to the order described by workers. News of the order spread through the plant as workers faced temperatures above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 38 degrees Celsius. Taking fans from workers is just backwards, and tells us how little the company thinks of the workers, one worker wrote. I have no doubt this is a plot to make workers want to quit, and or set the lines up for robots to just force people out. Another worker denounced Ford's claim that the fans posed a safety issue. So they want to take fans away when it's hotter than hell out, talking about it's a safety hazard. That's some certified BS, and we all know it. The worker added, let's see how much of a hazard there will be when you have people fall out from overheating, or God forbid, somebody has heat stroke. Ford workers are already dealing with massive workload increases since the new contract was ratified in 2023, which was immediately followed by layoffs. It's insane, a Dearborn worker said. Where is the union? At Ford Chicago Assembly Plant, a worker described conditions as tragic, overheated, and miserable. Workers report that ambulances are regularly stationed at the back of the plant for workers who fall ill from the heat. At GM Flint, a worker confronted the chairman of United Auto Workers Local 598 on an internal message board over getting cheap headbands instead of cooling towels in 110 degree Fahrenheit, 43 degrees Celsius heat index. The response from the bureaucracy was to defend management. The company was trying to do things like popsicles, cooling towels and headbands to show empathy for the heat, one official wrote. It's not something that they are required to do, so don't take one if you don't like it. A factory worker in Missouri said, people drop and get put in ambulances daily, specifically around the bath where they do a pressure test with boiling water on the cans. They mostly put women there, at least in the hot times. If a can fails, you put on a thick glove and fish it out. Combined with this oppressive heat, the humidity drops people regularly. A postal worker reported that at one location, carriers refused to begin delivery until management purchased more water. They sat in the break room till they brought water into the office, one postal worker said. They had no cooling towels, which they are to supply, and no water. It isn't like they didn't know how hot it was going to be. Another postal worker texted, it's hard to breathe and coughing, but I'll be back in tomorrow. My heart rate was 125, a hot mess. Another carrier wrote, every carrier should call off and let these assholes go out and deliver mail instead of sitting on their ass in the air conditioning. At UPS in Knoxville, Tennessee, Teamsters Local 519 issued a July 1st letter acknowledging serious complaints about conditions in the Knoxville building. The letter said the building had operated under extreme temperatures, that egress conditions were outrageous, and that workers had been physically lying on the floor due to these working conditions. Corporate supervisors, it said, walked around them without regard for the situation, while stewards stayed with affected workers to monitor them. A public post from East TN Teamsters Facebook page said employees had become so affected by the conditions that some were lying on the floor, while management continued operations and walked past affected employees. Delivery drivers are particularly at risk, with heat-related deaths virtually an annual occurrence in American summers. In June 2023, Dallas letter carrier Eugene Gates Jr. collapsed and died while delivering mail during a heatwave, with the heat index reaching 115 degrees Fahrenheit, 46 degrees Celsius. In 2024, USPS worker Wednesday Wendy Johnson died after working for hours in the back of a mail truck in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where text messages reported temperatures of 102 degrees Fahrenheit, 39 degrees Celsius, in the truck. In 2025, Dallas area letter carrier Jacob Taylor and Grand Junction, Colorado carrier Dan Workman died while working routes in extreme heat. The U.S. Postal Service is only partway through replacing its aging long-life vehicles, many of which lack air conditioning and have remained in service far beyond their expected lifespan. At UPS, the Teamsters bureaucracy promoted a contract that required air conditioning only in newly purchased small package delivery vehicles beginning January 1, 2024. A later agreement commits UPS to retrofit only 5,000 package cars with air conditioning by June 2027, with a pilot program for AC vented into the cargo compartment covering just 100 package cars. Will Lehman, a Mack Trucks worker in Macungie, Pennsylvania, and socialist candidate for UAW president, issued a statement Thursday calling on workers to take control over safety conditions as the heatwave spreads across factories, warehouses, construction sites, farms, and delivery routes. Quote, "Workers must have the right to stop the line and halt production when heat or any other condition threatens health and safety, with no retaliation, discipline, or loss of pay," Lehman said. "All workers must receive paid heat breaks, unlimited access to cool water and electrolytes, shaded and air-conditioned rest areas, and medical attention on demand. Production rates must be reduced or production halted when heat indices reach dangerous levels, including inside plants where machinery, concrete, poor ventilation, and physical labour make conditions worse than outside readings suggest. All workplaces must be equipped with proper climate controls, including air conditioning and ventilation, paid for by the companies. Workers must receive full pay for any shutdown caused by unsafe heat, storms, power failures, wildfire smoke, pandemics, or other emergencies. All heat-related incidents, near misses, hospitalizations, and complaints must be reported immediately and made public to the entire workforce." Lehman called for replacing worthless joint labor management safety committees with safety committees made up entirely of active workers elected by and accountable to the rank and file. No worker should die for a truck or any other commodity. Workers must unite, take control over safety, and fight for a system based on human need, not private profit. Unquote. Workers cannot wait for management. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, or the union bureaucracies to act after more people collapse or die. Rank-and-file committees must be built in every workplace to monitor conditions, report heat illness and near misses, stop work when conditions are unsafe, demand full pay during heat-related shutdowns, and link workers across plants, warehouses, routes, and industries. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.